Among our cast of characters is Daniel, who is a deported Jewish boy of about 18 years old and his three friends. He's been attending the University of Babylon and all the arts of spiritism and education, and he has really needed God's wisdom to sort out what he should hang on to, which is in line with God's truth, and what is not. Well, one night the king of Babylon has a dream, and it really upsets him because he has a feeling it has to do with him as well as his kingdom. And so he calls for his advisors and spiritual counselors, come and help me. But he tests them because he doesn't really trust them. He hasn't been the king all that long, and he doesn't want to be fed a lie and a baloney. And so instead of asking just simply for the interpretation of the dream, he says, I'd like you to tell me the dream itself and then the interpretation. Well, of course, they say it's impossible. As we mentioned, the gods don't live on earth, though we know our God does live everywhere and did come. Well, when they say we can't do what you want, he says, all right, then off with your heads and all your body parts, in a very literal fashion. Well, Daniel is one of the king's wise men. He's been in training. He may have graduated from the U of B. We do not know quite yet, but he is lumped in this category. And when the king executioner comes looking to haul him away and do to him whatever he was going to do, he goes, by the way, why are we about to be killed? Good question. I recommend asking it if that happens to you. But anyway, he then gets a backstory and he asks for time and he gathers his friends together and God of heaven, reveal this mystery. You brought us all the way from Jerusalem through the desert, over the desert, and through the woods by the river, and here we are, and you've trained us. Please, God, show us what we need to know. And the Lord comes through and reveals the dream and its interpretation. And Daniel goes on to point out to some things to the king, but he makes very clear that no one, no human can do this. But then he stresses, there is a God in heaven who reveals mystery. There is a God in heaven and in Babylon and on earth, and I happen to know him, and he's told me what's going to happen. And so remember, this is not because Daniel is great or wonderful, but because God is, and because God wanted the king to know what the dream was about. Well, this leads us to the second half of our study in Daniel chapter 2. And we have the details in the presentation of the dream. And it begins with the presentation of the dream in the first few verses. I can imagine Daniel with this big news going before the king and going, okay, king, this is how it was. And in verse 31, you saw, O king, and behold, a great image. And he probably looked at the king and the king went, yes, keep going. This image, mighty and exceedingly and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. Well, Daniel reveals exactly what the king, keep going, more details. Oh, yeah, they're all matching up. Shoo, this is a large and a dazzling statue. And Daniel didn't say if it was a man or a woman or if it was him or someone he knew. It didn't say it was an idol. But the key thing is what the statue was made of and what happens to the statue. You see, King Nebuchadnezzar, through this dream, is about to get a preview of world history from himself until time eternal, which is really cool. In verse 32, and you can put it up if it's there, the head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. And as you looked, O king, a stone cut by no human hand struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Very interesting. The head is the only member of this body made of only one kind of metal. And all the other parts had more than one substance, with the exception of the arms. You know, you've got the upper torso being part, and then you've got bronze, and then you get to the feet, and those are of mixed materials. There's these, also the precious metals, the gold's more precious than silver, more precious than bronze, which of course, iron and clay going down. It's also top heavy. Gold weighs more per ounce than does silver and bronze and clay and so forth. And it's also, it's softest at the top and hardest at the bottom. So we have this presentation, but then we have a prophecy of what it's going to involve. We read, then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like chaff, of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. It's interesting. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you've got these different kingdoms rising, being replaced, and then this giant stone comes. You know, I don't really watch a lot of the end of the world disaster movies, but I'm imagining, I don't know if they ever had one called Asteroid, but you look in the sky, all the people are looking in the sky. What's that? And you see this flaming thing, and this shape gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Whoa! And then pretty soon, smash, and it kind of kills everybody just like that. And then the dust cloud and the movie's over, I guess. But no, somebody's going to survive and repopulate the earth. That's how the movies always go. But I'm just imagining, suddenly this rock out of nowhere comes and fills the earth and destroys the image. Well, so far, so good. Daniel has heard from God correctly and relayed the message to the king correctly. And the king's going, wow, that's exactly what I saw. That's what I thought. Whoa, keep on going, Daniel. And so Daniel continues in verse 36. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation. Why in the world does he say we? Are his friends hiding behind him? I don't think so. It's probably kind of a form of speech that kind of Daniel's able to be humble and yet also kind of saying, well, we kind of got me plus, well, God plus me, we're kind of telling you. But nevertheless, he relays this forward. He says, you, O king, the king of kings. He's really buttering him up. But to be truthful, at this time, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of all the kings on the earth. To whom the God of heaven, and we've seen that phrase many times in this chapter, has given the kingdom, the power and the might and the glory. And into whose hands he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of men, the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, making you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. Now, I'm imagining when Nebuchadnezzar hears, you're the king of gold, he's like, oh yeah, I like this dream. But he's probably still going, but if I remember correctly, some things happen eventually. Well, to be truthful, he was the head of gold. He was an absolute ruler. What he said went. Subsequent kingdoms, they would have different forms of plurality of leaders. With the Medes and Persians, when the king made a law, he couldn't change it. Nebuchadnezzar's like, I can change the law 45 times a minute if I feel like it. And if you don't like it, well, tough luck for you, pal. What he said was law. And it turned out he ruled about 45 years from 605 to 560 BC. And then the kingdom lasted about another 21 years. His father had founded the Babylonian Empire a few years before him. And in total, Babylon lasted about 88 years. It's interesting, though, that Babylon kind of has its roots in Babel. If you go back to Genesis 11, and you can actually kind of trace the theme of Babel, Babylon, and all the way to the revelation of John at the end of the book. Well, he may not have had as big of territorial empire, but no one had more power. Earlier, Jeremiah had warned lots of kings, the kings of Edom, Moab, Ammon, Tyre, Sidon, that God had given Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty. He was in charge. And so much so that he's described as the king of kings. So much so that he's like, you rule over the animals too, which is really interesting because I believe chapter 4? Nebuchadnezzar is going to get too big of a head and he's going to live and act like an animal for 7 years. Fascinating. He may rule over the animals for now, but don't let it go to your head, pal, because you'll be one soon. Well, even Nebuchadnezzar, though, is under the God of heaven. He just doesn't know it yet. And that's kind of what goes on in our world. Hey, we're the king. We got this. I'm the leader. Well, your day is coming, pal. Just wait. God's only put you there for a time. In verse 39, we read, another kingdom inferior to you shall rise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule after the earth. That's a key phrase, after you. Kingdom of gold is here. And after he's gone, and presumably after he's had a long life, long successful reign, then other things happen. He's like, I don't care what happens then, I'll be off the scene as long as things are good with me. Well, it is interesting, you know, because eventually the Persian Empire under Cyrus the Great would arise and Daniel will get to meet him. And it is true that Medo Persia wasn't as, they couldn't make the laws and change him however they wanted to, but it was a bigger kingdom. And it did last longer, a couple hundred years, from like 539 to 331. It's thought that maybe the arms of the statue represent the two kingdoms of Media and Persia, who united to defeat the Babylonians. Well, the views of most interpreters are the following kingdom was that of Greece under Alexander the Great. We've all heard of him. He's a young guy. He conquers the known world from, oh goodness, Europe all the way to India. And it said he wept because there was no more world to conquer. Of course, the Chinese would say, he didn't get up to see us or we would have showed him. But that's another story. There's a lot of debate about when his kingdom exactly ended. But after his death at age 33, then his kingdom was split into four different parts under his four different generals. And again, it would be not as it would be a large kingdom, but not as magnificent or strong as some of the others. It could have been eventually the Greek Empire divided into two parts, kind of the western and eastern part, and that could have to do with the two thighs. We don't know. But something I want you to keep in mind is that for believers, nothing and no one on this earth will last. Remember, there will be an after this. Remember, after you or after this is coming these different kingdoms. Don't like what's going on now? Well, there's going to be an after this. And if you don't like what's going on after that, well, there'll be an after this. And this after this is going to be Jesus eventually. There's going to be other King Nebuchadnezzars that rise and they will fall until the last kingdom comes. So take heart, believers. God is going to outlast them all. He will outlast them all. And if we're with him, he will help us do so. In verse 40, we see, and there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush these. Out of the ashes of Greece comes Rome, or actually Rome sets fire to Greece, really. And Rome defeated the last holdout of the Greek Empire in about 31 BC and ruled until 476 in the western part of the empire until about 1453 in the eastern Roman Empire. But I will say there's all kinds of different dates. Scholars float back and forth about when did Rome actually fall, and every other book has a different date. So don't get caught up too much on that. But do remember that Rome crushed all opposition, and it was brutal. And this was the largest kingdom by far. It conquered almost all of Europe, North Africa, had Spain and the British Isles, went very far east as well. Basically, under the legs of Rome, the ancient world trembled. Well, we find that the first three kingdoms are described briefly, and then we get more details about this fourth kingdom. As you saw the feet and toes, in verse 41, partly of potter's clay, partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with the soft clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with the soft clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. Main thing to note is you've got two different materials in this last kingdom, and they have their different qualities, they have their different uses, but they mix kind of like oil and water. They don't real well. Iron's strong, clay is weak, and in some ways Rome was the strongest kingdom. Militarily, none of the others could have touched them. But it's thought that maybe this mixing was kind of a metaphor or a way of talking about you've got the Caesar, but then you've got the people and the Senate, and how they kind of interacted. And so none of the emperors had as much absolute power as some of the other kingdoms previous to it. We don't know. The interesting thing is it's very likely that Rome is not only in the rearview mirror, but also a little bit in the future as well. Some scholars said, Rome never fell apart like Humpty Dumpty. It fell apart from within, not by being conquered, but its influence lives on today in art and language, literature, if you ever studied any of the Romance languages, you have the Romans to thank for that, and the governments of the West. And lots of people have tried to put this back together. Charlemagne, Napoleon, kind of Hitler and Mussolini trying to make this empire come together. But no one has so far. And God's not ready for the Antichrist, the one who temporarily to put it together yet, to arrive on the scene. The key is, though, there's lots of speculation about the history and the exact dates, but don't get caught up with that. Keep in mind, the kingdoms of this world are not going to last forever. There is another kingdom coming, and that is the kingdom of our God and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever. The big issue is not the identifications of those kingdoms and time frames, but the fact that God is over everything. Keep in mind, God rules over the world, and he will, and everyone will note it someday. Right now, it may look like evil's got the upper hand. We look around and go, wow, this is nuts. But evil will not win. God will. Only God's a true source of wisdom. The kingdoms of this world are decreasing in value, and God will win. Bet on that. As the people of God, that's what we hang on to. The rock is coming, and we are thankfully with him and not going to be under him. Well, we will be under his rule, but we won't get crushed by him. Verse 44, in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw a stone was cut from the mountain by no human hand, that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. A great God has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be after this. The dream is certain, the interpretation is sure. Well, the mountain out of which the rock comes is God. It will never be succeeded. It will never end. It begin in the millennium and continue to the eternal state, and it will destroy all other kingdoms. Well, the stone that comes to strike the statue and become a mountain and fill the earth, that's none other than Jesus himself. He's the stone that is mentioned over and over and over in Scripture that has become the capstone. He's the stone the builders rejected, but the one who still remains in power. When he comes to set up his kingdom, all others will be put down. He's not going to shape them or shift them or alter them or tweak them. No, he's going to crush them and start over and set up his own rule, and it is going to be great. It will be perfect and everlasting and absolutely uncontested. He may be the stone the world rejects for now, but not for long. But the key thing to remember is when it comes to Jesus as the capstone, we're either broken before him or we will be broken by him. I encourage you, recognize the capstone or get crushed by it. Recognize, bow down now because he is coming. It's interesting, this vision, the rock comes and crushes and the wind blows everything away. Again, this is a cataclysmic, explosive end to the world's empires. All the gold, silver, bronze, poof, they are gone. God remains. Don't forget, all pagan religion and attempts to do things are futile. Don't forget, human power is very fragile. Humanity is not the glue that holds things together. Yes, we should do things to take care of our environment, but the fate of the world isn't in our hands. It is in God's ultimately. But guess what? God's kingdom is firm forever. He is in control. So in light of this, let me encourage you, rejoice. Why? The King of Kings is coming. He's ruling and reigning. He is coming back. Be ready to receive your king. Well, let's go to our chart, hopefully, and you can kind of see what's going on. And yes, we're trying to figure out a new projector because my notes are white, and that obviously is colors of many kinds. So, but the gold is the head, silver, the chest and arms, bronze, the middle and thighs, iron's the legs, iron and clay, the feet, and then the rock. And we have Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, the Rome of the past and the Rome, however it's going to be before Christ coming, and then Jesus. And then you can take a look at the, maybe that's more to your liking, seeing the statue itself. But the fact is, Daniel could do what no man could because God revealed the answer to him. And this amazed the king. And the king really treated Daniel as if he was some kind of a god. He bows down and he offers things to him. We read in verse 46, then Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel. Doesn't say he worshiped, but he really honored him. And he commanded an offering and incense be offered up to him. There's where he crossed the line, I think. Well, the king answered and said to Daniel, truly your God is God of gods and Lord of lords and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. Throughout chapter 2 of Daniel, we have reveal, show, tell, mystery repeated over and over and over. I think something like 20 or 30 times. Well, we don't read that Daniel tells the king, cut it out, stand up, stop doing that. But clearly we know Daniel has made clear to the king, I don't know nothing, but I know the God who does. He's the one that gave me the answer, and I'm revealing it to you. Well, in the end, Nebuchadnezzar did not say, he does say, your God is the true God. He is the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. The challenge is, he says, your God. He doesn't come to the point of saying, my God. Ah, you're so close. Nebuchadnezzar's going to have an interesting journey. Of course, he's going to go crazy for a while. And then when he humbles himself, he is going to praise Daniel's God again. And it almost sounds like maybe God has changed his heart, but not quite. But this is an amazing scene. You've got the mightiest king in the history of the planet up to this point bowing before a teenage Jewish exile. Isn't that amazing? And what's he doing? Your God is the bomb. You know, your God is amazing. This is our God has worked things out. He knew what he was doing when he allowed Daniel to get hauled off to end of exile. He was placing him in a position to influence the world. This is incredible. We read next about the promotion of Daniel. Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon. Remember, he was about to get his body parts sliced and diced off. And now what's happened? He's being honored. And he's made chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. These wise men of Babylon presumably have been there for decades doing their thing. And then you have this 18-year-old upstart from out of town, a foreigner, no doubt. And what's happening? He is placed in authority. Amazing. That could really get to the average teenager's head. Get my head, I know. For sure. But Daniel is going to continue to walk with God and be humble before God and humble before the king. Amazing. You know, you'd really think that this job would go to a red-blooded Babylonian. No. It goes to this young guy. Well, Daniel sees an opportunity. He's placed in this position of power. And he says, you know, I'd like to kind of spread the wealth of this opportunity around. And so he made a request to the king. And he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his three Jewish faithful friends over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Isn't that amazing? By the way, king, these guys really are smart too, and they are working hard on behalf of you, and they know the God I know. How about if you give them a cool job? And he's like, yeah, all right. And then we read, but Daniel remained at the king's court. These guys were over the head of the most important province in the kingdom. Daniel is right there where he can have the king's ear and the king can have his ear. This is amazing. There were three deportations of Jews from Babylon or from Jerusalem under the Babylonians. One when Daniel was taken, probably in 605 BC, and then a couple more times, which is very fascinating because as these Jews would be removed from Jerusalem, brought to Babylon, plunked down, who just happens to be in charge? Their fellow Jews. Worshippers of the one true God. God is working these details out. Was this hard for Daniel? Oh, yeah. He's young. He's lost everything he knew. He's in a difficult situation. He's already faced death a couple times. But God has allowed this to happen. God is placing them here, and Daniel is walking closely with him. Well, guess what? Daniel, we're reading about, instead of him being in the dustbin of history, he didn't compromise in chapter 1. And he wasn't afraid to face the king because he went to God in chapter 2. We'll see that life doesn't get easier for him, but God is with him. Well, what's the purpose of all these dreams? Well, among other things, Nebuchadnezzar is the king who just defeated Israel, but he's going to be given a reminder. You may be the king now, but there's other kings a-coming, and your kingdom is not going to ultimately be the most powerful. By the way, king, you might want to humble yourself. He didn't quite get the message, but we'll see that. But it did seem to put a little bit of the fear of God in him. Well, for Daniel and his friends, wow, they had to be encouraged. Babylon had conquered them and crushed all the other nations, but their God was still on the throne. He was still revealing mysteries, and he would reign forever. Guess what? He is still reigning in our day, too. Well, for the king's advisors and onlookers, well, God was giving them an opportunity. They didn't get killed that day by the king because they couldn't tell the dream. They had another day to watch and see what the God of Daniel would do. And they also saw, wow, all of our training, our faith in Babylon's gods didn't do us any good. But there's something about this Daniel and his gods that is up to something. Of course, as the book goes on, we'll see they didn't like Daniel, so they didn't really get the message about God, but they had the opportunity. For us, I think we can say, if we look back in history, God said these things would happen, these nations would rise and fall, and they did. And thus, when we look to the future, we can know that when God says something's going to happen, we can bet it will. As a way of review, remember, there will be an after this. Whatever is going on in your life or the world, God will be there. Recognize the capstone and get crushed by it. Worship it. Bow down before Jesus while you have time. Rejoice. The King of Kings is coming. The rock that fills the whole earth is on its way. That's good news. And then in the meantime, remain faithful while waiting. Daniel remained there working with the king. He was a servant for about 70 years. I personally can't quite relate to 70 years of life yet, though I hope to someday. And some of you are like, oh, 70, wait till you hit whatever. But we'll talk about that later. But nevertheless, that's a long time to be a servant. He remained there, and God protected him and allowed him to be there. In the meantime, we want to remain faithful. We read in 2 Peter, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire. The earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. No matter what's going on in this world, our God is coming back. He rules and reigns in heaven. He soon will return. The Roman Emperor Julian hated Christians. He was on the throne like from AD 332 to 363. Well, fighting the Persians, he was mortally wounded. And during the campaign, one of his followers asked a Christian in the city of Antioch what the carpenter's son was doing. And the Christian replied, "The maker of the world, whom you call the carpenter's son, is employed in making a coffin for the emperor." Within days, news came to Antioch that Julian had died. Well, that's where we end with Daniel 2. Jesus has a coffin for every empire and every emperor. The only security is in the kingdom of the carpenter's son. May we bow and worship and give thanks to him. Lord, we thank you that you are a God who reveals truth and wisdom and mysteries. We thank you for Daniel, who serves as an example for us in so many ways. We thank you that what you have said will happen in the past has, and what hasn't happened yet, we can bet will. Lord, we are so glad that your kingdom is a-coming. Help us to be faithful as we live in light of it. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.